Backyard Green Films is proud to present this episode of Agriculture with your host, Alara Bowman. Alara and her husband, Rick, travel throughout the land in their new trailer that they have nicknamed Bessie, bringing you stories about their travels and the people they meet. They visit farmers, ranchers, and just about anyone who loves putting their hands in the dirt or their feet in stirrups. For the past few years, they have been filming a documentary entitled The Holstein Dilemma, Heritage Breeds and the Need for Biodiversity, which will be coming out this fall. In those travels, they have gotten to meet some very interesting people. Here's one of those interviews.
Hi, this is Alara. Welcome back to our podcast. If you've been watching our YouTube channel for Backyard Green Films, you've probably noticed that Rick has been madly posting videos in preparation for the upcoming New York State Wool and Fiber Festival on October 17th and 18th. This wild and woolly event is usually held in the fall air of Rhinebeck, New York, but this year it's held virtually due to the COVID pandemic. I hope you all get a chance to visit sheepandwool.com and our Backyard Green Films YouTube channel to see some of the things the hardworking volunteers in New York have on tap. But on to today. I'm a sensory person, and a big chunk of that for me includes texture and color. So that makes something like Rhinebeck an exercise in self-control, even if I can't knit more than a stitch or two. There are certain materials which you just want to reach out and feel, and that can definitely make the interviewing process at an event like that interesting. I sound like a weirdo, but you fiber people get it, I'm sure. That sensory thing also makes me a huge fan of natural fibers like cotton and linen and, of course, wool. Those of you who have an appreciation for your favorite pair of well-worn jeans or maybe a wonderfully soft flannel or cotton t-shirt, you can understand that when you wear these things next to your skin, they just plain feel good. You feel good. The world feels good. And while a well-broken-in 100% cotton t-shirt is one of my favorite all-time things in the clothing category, I have to admit that I have a soft spot in the fiber portion of my heart for wool. I've always loved it dearly because of my obsession with warm sweaters and my deep-seated appreciation for my mother's skill in knitting sweaters for her children to feel comforted in, even when she wasn't there to do it. That said, my mental concept of wool has changed since we started this documentary. When I was little, I used to think of it as a bit thick and scratchy, but great to keep you warm. And that perception came from a light brown sweater that my mom knit that was wonderful for chilly days outside, but which I quickly learned to wear with an undershirt so the itching didn't get out of control. And then, one year, my mom splurged for Christmas and she bought each of her three daughters a fine grade cardigan sweater. And it amazed me to find out that this was also wool. There was very little, if any, itching on that one, and it was so soft and pretty, I had a hard time believing it was the same fiber. And then I found the joy of a pair of good wool socks, which is a difficult line to walk, haha. They have to have enough softness to feel good on your feet, but enough strength to last more than one season without getting holes in the heels. I'm one of those people who starts with the socks when getting dressed every morning insofar as the color scheme is concerned. When I buy a new pair of socks, I find shirts to match and not the other way around. It's kind of an art form to find the perfect mix of wool that matches the soft and sturdy requirement in the sock universe, but it is possible and I am just the girl to do it. The next thing in my wool evolution timeline was the beginning of our travel days about 15 years ago, when Rick and I started the mad dash about the country and sometimes about the planet. That's when I discovered my favorite underlayer shirt, and this one from a company called Icebreaker. It was soft as anything, and it was very sturdy and slightly thin, and it doubled as a t-shirt or a sleep shirt. And it was something that added just enough warmth when it was layered to survive an afternoon outing without bringing a heavier jacket. It was pricey to boot, I have to say, but it was worth every penny. These shirts were super easy to hand wash, and they dried overnight, and they wicked moisture away during the day so you didn't feel sweaty when you were running around. And I was amazed that this was also wool. So it took me a while to realize that wool can be strong and warm and a bit more stiff, or soft and delicate and very fine, or somewhere in between. It can be perfect to keep you warm or to keep you cool, to beat up in the yard or to wear with fine underthings. It wicks moisture away from your skin, it's flexible, and it can be very durable. And the most fascinating thing about all of those characteristics is the one I've learned over the last few years of doing our film and the podcast. Nearly all of those differences in the softness and durability scale of wool can depend heavily on the breed of sheep. Now, it's true that with many fibers, and sheep included, the place where you get the fiber makes a difference. We learned from the yak people that you get rugs from the outside, soft clothing from the part closest to the animal's skin. That seems to be a pretty good generalization all around, even if it's not always that extreme in all animals. Those little Shetland sheep we met seem to be pretty soft all over the place. But breed does make a huge difference. I have to admit, I still haven't gotten all the breeds down pat as far as fibers are concerned. There are hundreds of distinct breeds, and I'm still a bit of a newbie at this. I know that the Merinos are said to be super soft, and Navajo Churros are still a bit more sturdy, like Navajo rugs. But after that, sometimes it's off to the reference section for me. But I do know that just like the sturdy and warm sweater and durable yet comfortable sock and soft and light underlayer shirt, there are different characteristics in each. And so, as a texture person, I've gone even further down the rabbit hole now. And I've begun to look for breed-specific wool products to see what new things I can learn from the wool universe. The easiest way to do that involves visits to farmers we interview and a healthy contribution to the farm store, but that's for a good cause. Rick is somewhat amused. If you're a knitter and you can't get to a farm store, but you want a good starting point, you might look into companies that do that specifically. There are small shops like Flying Fibers and larger ones like Brooklyn Tweed. Well, that's just the texture end of the wool universe, and it's just a teeny corner of that universe. But I also mentioned color, and with this second thing, I get menu anxiety as well. As far as the color wheel is concerned, if it's found in a forest at night, it's probably going to be great in my book. Dark green, dark brown, dark blue, dark gray, that kind of thing is wonderful. All the Pacific Northwest by the ocean shades. Color is something that is soothing, exciting, calming, and evokes a mood immediately. And you can tell that I'm one of those people because of the previously mentioned sock dress code thing. But this brings me to the breed we're talking about today in our podcast, the Gotland sheep. I have to admit that this was not a sheep I'd ever heard much about before last year's Rhinebeck trip. But we were touring the barns and we met up with today's guest. And she'd brought a few of her animals along. They really hit me as something I wanted to learn more about for future sweater purchases. Podcast. Gotlands are not big sheep, but they are truly striking. Gotland Gray has become one of my favorite new colors, whether it be closer to gunmetal, charcoal, or steel. Today, we're bringing you Amy Corey of Little River Farm. She's going to give you some great information on the background and the history of this sheep, so I won't talk about that much beforehand. I will say that you absolutely have got to see a visual on these guys. We've posted a video on our YouTube channel to see the visuals on Amy's booth, including the sheep and the wool and the movement of the fleece as she showed it to us. They have the prettiest, naturally curly, naturally charcoal colored fleece you will ever see. These sheep are rather petite and they come in various shades, but they're all ones that you really want to reach out and pet. Take a look at these sheep and you might want to start sorting your sock colors too.
So I'm Amy Corey. I'm from Little River Farm in Canterbury, Connecticut, and we raise Gotland sheep. So these are my two Gotland babies. They're 6 months old. This is Effie and this is Edie, and they're Gotland lambs. So Gotland is a breed that we have brought from Sweden. They've only been in the United States since about 2002. They're really special because of their long wool, but they're not coarse like most of the long wools we have in this country. They've got this gorgeous, lustrous, soft wool. So they have this beautiful shine to them when you open up the locks. And they're a smaller breed. These are only 6 months, but they won't get too much bigger. So they're still really manageable and lovable. They're super inquisitive. They're a little bit different than most of the sheep I've raised. It's interesting. They grew up in Gotland, so grazing on the shores of the oceans. So they... Yeah, so it's we found that we really loved them. We raised Lincolns and we raised Blue-Faced Leicesters, but I'm a pure Gotland girl now. I just love these girls.
Will they maintain that pretty charcoal color throughout the whole life?
So this one will. Usually they're born black, and then they get lighter and lighter as they get older. So she was born pure black, like she was. But obviously she has more of the genetics to get this nice charcoal color. But this is much more typical of the Gotland breed, the silver with the black head. But this is what color they are when they come out, all completely black. And then as they get older, they do lighten up. And she's lightened up a little bit, but she's obviously going to keep this darker charcoal color. And they do range all shades of gray. I kind of joke and say they're my 50 shades of gray.
So is that a uniform thing, or are they lighter on the ends of
the fiber? It's pretty uniform throughout. I mean, if they get into the summer sun, they might get a little bit bleached on the tips, but usually it stays. And she'll lighten up as she gets older, too. She'll get a little bit lighter.
So the ones in the picture that we're seeing here behind us, yep, they are almost a whiter. Is that the sheen, or
I think that's just the sheen. Yeah, they're real. They're this color, just real silvery, and yeah. And you can see even in that picture, there's a little bit of variation. There's a couple darker and a couple lighter. This is by far sort of the typical traditional Gotland look here.
So now, how are they different? You said they're different from other breeds.
Well, they're excellent foragers. I mean, they'll act like goats and climb trees to eat things, and they'll eat. But one interesting difference about them is that copper is toxic to most sheep, but Gotland actually require it. So they've been kind of cool in that way. When I first got my Gotland, I had goats, and I always had to really struggle to keep the goats and the sheep separate because the goats need copper and most sheep don't, and so you can't feed them together because but the Gotland need that copper, so you can feed them with goats and it's okay. So that's kind of a cool thing.
That is really interesting. And
evolutionary, difference, I think, from the years on the island of Gotland. So,
but if you have specific requirements on your land and you have copper, I mean, you don't want to be just out of luck for sheep altogether. So this is a really easy way to solve that problem.
Well, I think almost every animal needs a certain amount of copper. I mean, we do. And so sheep actually, they do get copper naturally from the grass that they eat, but you just wouldn't want to get them any extra copper because it would build up toxicity. So, I mean, but these guys need a little extra than they would just normally get. So you do have to give them that supplement somehow, whether you give them goat treats or you add it to your feed, you have to get that copper supplement for them. So
do you know how long this breed's been around?
We've had them in the United States since about 2002, but they've been around since Viking times. They're a Viking sheep. In Sweden, there was a landrace sheep and there was an ancient Gouta sheep. And when the Vikings traveled, of course, they took sheep with them and brought sheep back because they needed it to eat on the boats and stuff. So the Vikings brought back Karakul and Romanov sheep from Russia and bred them with their landrace sheep that they had in Sweden. And that's how we got the Gotland breed of sheep. So they are an improved breed. They're not primitive. They're an improved long wool breed, but the Vikings did the improvement. So they've been. And then in the 1920s in Sweden, they is when sort of this breed sort of evolved up to till about then. And this has been the breed standard since about the 20s in Sweden. So, and they're just gorgeous and beautiful. In Sweden, they're known as the Pälsfar sheep, which means pelt sheep, and they're grown and prized primarily for those pelts. And, for the fur skins, and, all over Sweden are these beautiful pelts, and they're really gorgeous. And the meat is tender and good for eating. So that's, in Sweden, they're grown for the meat and the pelts. But in America, we just primarily prize them for their wool and the shearing. But you shear them twice a year, so they are long wool, so they're really, really great with that. The other thing that's been fantastic about the Gotland is that they're just so hardy. I live in Connecticut, so the weather's really cold, but they have no problems throughout the winter. And when they lamb, they do it all by themselves. They're great mothers. The mothers are really milky. They really take care of their young. And the babies are born almost instantly getting up and trying to nurse. They're ready to go. Whereas I've had sheep that you have to convince them to live. They don't even want to live. But these guys are hardy. The moms take care of them completely. I never had to help with a birth yet. So that's a really wonderful thing about them, too, that hardiness. They're great foragers. I had a few different breeds of sheep, and when I met these guys, I really fell in love. They're so special. So them. They're good girls.
So in terms of the wool, you have a great selection of wool here. Yep. And this is one of my favorite colors, that charcoal gray.
Yeah, it is
gray.
Beautiful, isn't it? Like.
So that is a natural color depth that you get without ever having to do anything to the wool.
Yeah, these are just all natural. You can dye it, and it takes dye beautifully, but... That's sort of what the American market has really loved about them, is this beautiful silvery, lustery color. So all these shades of gray, yeah.
So in terms of the tensile strength, is it a softer? Is it a coarser?
Yeah, I'm trying to think what the micron range on them is. I mean, it's not like a merino for sure. It's not, but the lamb fleeces have really low microns. They're really soft and beautiful for that reason.
So we're a ski sweater thing that feels good, but yet you can go down the mountain in it kind of thing?
I would wear it next to my skin.
Okay,
yeah.
Next to your skin.
Especially a lamb fleece, you know. As they get older, like any breed, it's going to get a little more coarse, you know. That's what, you know, the market is really for the lamb fleeces, because they're just so silky and soft.
Thank you so
much. My pleasure. Thank you.
We love to bring you this podcast every week. We visit places all across the country and even a few places outside the U.S. We'd love to keep doing this as long as we can, but holy cow, gas is expensive. So we've started up a Patreon account. If you'd like to help be a part of the stories you hear, we'd love your support, feedback, and suggestions. If you'd like to make that financial support, please follow the Patreon links in our podcast intro for more information. Every little bit is another mile we can put on the road to bring you the conversations we hope you enjoy. We want to thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week.
We'd like to thank Amy Corey of Little River Farm for joining us today. If you'd like more information about her and her farm store, please visit littleriverfarmstore.com. Also, if you'd like to find out more about the Gotland sheep that Amy discussed, please visit the American Gotland Sheep Society at americangotlandsheep.org. You have been listening to Agriculture with your host, Alara Bowman. Please tune in for more upcoming episodes from our travels. I'm Rick Bowman, your behind-the-scenes editor. Until next time. This has been a presentation of Backyard Green Films Productions, all rights reserved, copyright 2020.